This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
They have to have a young rookie quarterback, certainly now behind Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston. Otherwise, I don't know what the hell the Giants are doing.
This is interesting. This is odd. This is everything in between. The crazy thing about this, Sal, like I obviously don't love it. I'm not a Russell Wilson fan. I always prefer to see Jameis Winston play here at some point. But having said that, over Russell, having said that, like, as strange as a group as it is right now, it's probably still the best quarterback room the Giants have had in about 7 years or so. Maybe eight. Like, you go back to the end when Eli was clearly done, and obviously Daniel Jones and the backups that they've had since then. At least there's a semblance of a plan. We might not agree with the plan, but their plan seems to be pretty clear. Start Russell Wilson, who has won a lot of games in the NFL. If he gets hurt or he stumbles, you go to Jameis Winston, and then obviously you draft the kid very high and you go from there.
About Russell Wilson, this is not, now I like Russell Wilson. I happen to think he's very underrated overall in his career. He can throw a beautiful deep ball. He's been a winner before. We know that with Seattle. But three franchises have moved on from Russell Wilson. The Seahawks didn't want him. The Broncos realized it was a disaster. And now the Steelers, who have no quarterback, I know they're waiting on Rodgers, but they moved on from him. And here are the Giants saying, please, Russell, please, we need Russell Wilson to be our starting quarterback. I just don't understand the thought process. Here's what it is. I do understand it. I hate it. I hate what the Giants are doing because Dable and Shane clearly trying to thread that needle of trying to win now. And I don't think they're going to take a young quarterback, BT. For me, this year should be it should be all about the young quarterback, who they draft and then develop. They're not going to take one with the top. I'd be stunned at this point. But the reason why I'm not going to go nuts is because it's still possible the path to what I wanted, Russell Wilson plus that young quarterback. That is still possible.
Yep.
But for me, it just doesn't feel like it's likely at this particular point.
Are they going to be more interesting than they were a year ago? I think for me, the answer is yes. Are they going to be more competent and more of a threat to find the end zone in the first month or so than they were a year ago? I think that they will be.
I mean, the Steelers' offense stunk last year.
Yeah, that's true. It was actually better with Justin Fields in spurts here. The interesting thing about the Steelers, who are trying to win a championship and are, I mean, everybody's trying, but the Steelers are actually in the neighborhood of being one of the teams that could be on the short list to viably, like, to be viable enough to compete for championship, and they let him go. So that's got to make you scratch your head. And remember, we talked about this. the offer to Justin Fields to retain him over Russell was slightly higher than what the Jets offered, but Justin just decided to go to the Jets. So the Steelers made a preference. Not only did they not necessarily want Wilson, but they clearly wanted Fields over Wilson. Listen, this is what happens, and we've said it a million times, when you're in a tough spot, and you've been chasing your tail for years, and you are waiting on somebody who is very inconsistent with the timing of his thought process. I think Rodgers would have been a better fit. We know Stafford would have been a better fit, but they could not run the risk of Rodgers in a month saying, I'm done with football or whatever, and then not getting Wilson or Jameis or Rodgers. Like, they had to do something. It's strange,
though. I want to know why they went from going all in on Stafford to not going all in on one of the young quarterbacks. That, to me, is the path.
You mean in the draft, one of those quarterbacks?
Yes.
Well, I mean, the draft hasn't happened yet. I still think they're going to get a quarterback. Well,
that's why I said I got
to. They're going to get one. You really don't think they're going to get a quarterback in the first. In the first two rounds.
So you're telling me they're going to draft some no-name guy in the second or third round?
Well, I mean, maybe a no-name to us, but I mean, if you somebody with a round two grade, or maybe they scoot into the back of round one like the Ravens did back in the day with Lamar. There's no doubt the Giants are taking a quarterback on the first, within the first two rounds. They have to.
Okay, look, without scouring the film in college football, what's the one thing that we know definitively about this draft as it pertains to quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, the consensus is that it's weak.
Okay, it's weak. That means that the first few guys are like, if they aren't any good, why would I think that they're going to find some diamond in the rough in the second or third round? As an organization, their philosophy, right or wrong, should be, we have Shane, we have Dable, we need to draft and develop our next franchise quarterback. They should have done it last year. They didn't. They have to do it this year. And instead, it's Russell freaking Wilson, who, by the way, not only did the Seahawks want to move on from, not only did the Broncos and Sean Payton want to move on from, and even take a major bullet as far as the salary cap goes from him. Not only did Mike Tomlin and the Steelers want to move on from Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, the coach he won a Super Bowl with, had a chance to bring him in and be a veteran quarterback with the Raiders, and they chose Geno Smith. So, and not to mention the personality issues that potentially Russell Wilson has, where some guys look at him as a goof. You heard the stuff going on with the Broncos. We know with Jameis' personality. Like, that is a wild quarterback room for a football team that stinks. There's no other way to put it. The New York Giants have been awful, and they are projected to be awful. I don't see how they're getting any better, which, to me, why then even bother? Just go try to find the franchise quarterback.
Okay, so the point about this being, by most views, a weak draft. I mean, that's the joke, right? In terms of quarterback, not in terms of the other positions. The other positions very strong, certain spots for sure. But the general consensus is it is a weak quarterback draft. Now, I just popped this up real quick out of curiosity. NFL.com from years ago, the scouting report on Russell Wilson, played at Wisconsin, played at NC State, right? And I wanted to cherry pick one thing. There's other things that are interesting, but this is short, right? So I look at his weaknesses. This is the obvious. Will, as I read, this is from years ago. Wilson's height will be his biggest inhibitor at the next level and the largest reason for his late round value. Here's what I find interesting. It remains to be seen if he can effectively throw from the pocket at the next level. If you were to put together a 3-minute package of his highlights, including Super Bowls and NFC Championship games, his best plays were out of the pocket.
Right.
So here, that's what I'm saying. Like, I get it. These guys, they scour film. We don't. Yeah. We don't front with that. You know, we'll watch the Penn States and we'll watch, you know, I checked in on Jackson Dart once. You do a little bit of homework, but we're not sitting there watching snap after snap. So we're very honest about that. But this is the scouting combine scouting report from NFL.com that said that his greatest weakness was throwing from the pocket. That's how he made a living, and that's how he became a champion. I say that because at the end of the day, if you get the player in the right system, things change, and that's up to the Giants now.
Yeah, and for me, it's just if they don't take one of the best quarterbacks in this draft, which I don't think that they will, but it's still possible, which is why I got to hesitate to go nuts. I think it's been a disaster. I'd be more excited if the Yankees signed Russell Wilson to play third base than I am with the Giants signing him to be their quarterback. BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. We are live at Studio 42. 2, MLB Network, and they're calling today Baseball Eve. We have plenty of baseball going on today. They have a full lineup of shows, including a special MLB Tonight prediction show coming up at 7. We will make a cameo on that later on. We get Cliff Floyd, Dempster, DeRosa, Al Leiter, all scheduled to join us, so looking forward to that. But obviously, we have to start with Russell Wilson.
There's no doubt. I know a lot of people want to jump in. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the phones. BT and Sal on the fan. Let's get John in Danbury, Connecticut. John, what's going on, buddy? How you feeling today?
Not well, guys. I'll be honest with you. This whole Russell Wilson thing is making me feel gross. Like, I just don't like the guy. He's washed up. He's done. But this just shows me that the organization does not like anyone in the draft, especially early on. And I can't see them either picking either one of the guys. I do like Cam Ward a little bit better than I do Shedeur Sanders. Mm-hmm. But I think they're either going to trade out. Hopefully they get 2 first-round picks. That would be fantastic. But I definitely see them drafting, you know, a quarterback who's dropped, you know, late in the first round or, you know, second or third round. But I think that's the quarterback from Tommy DeVito, Jameis Winston, and Russell Wilson.
John, let me ask you a question.
I need a reality show on these guys, too.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. It's definitely an interesting combination. So you said you're not feeling great. You don't love it. I get it. No, I don't know that anybody loves what the Giants are doing. Most are scratching their head, including me and Sal, maybe to varying degrees. But I get it. But you called and you say you didn't like it. Before the offseason started, what would have been your perfect Giants offseason for the quarterback room? And I ask you, and I want you to answer, but before you do, I ask that because I don't know if there was a perfect answer, so it probably would have had to be unconventional. What was your take on that?
I think it's more of what is realistic. And personally, realistically, I wanted Jameis Winston. I think he adds a spark to the offense. Yeah, he's a feast or famine guy. He's going to throw 3 interceptions and 3 touchdowns. But at least we're scoring points and we're moving the ball. And for the fans, that's exciting. So I like him as a veteran presence. And I think it was drafting a guy in the first round. I don't like Sanders. I think Cam Ward's a better option. I'm also partial because I'm a Miami fan. But he's got the stature. He's pretty calm in the pocket. And I think Daboll can work with those attributes to make him a pretty decent quarterback in the NFL.
And the point is, thanks for the call, John. The point is, Giant fans need something to be excited about. I'm not hating on Russell Wilson, but it should be Russell Wilson and the young quarterback. What is their direction? What is the point of what they are trying to do? They think Russell Wilson's going to be here 2 or 3 years? Or Shane and Daboll kicking the can down the road again, trying to build a winner? They stink. Their roster stinks. The results have stunk. And now they bring in Russell Wilson, who, as I mentioned before, nobody wanted. Of all the teams, he won a Super Bowl with Seattle. See ya. We'd rather Geno Smith. Coach he won a Super Bowl with, well, no interest. We'd rather go trade for Geno Smith. Sean Payton said, no thanks. I'd rather Bo Nix. And he won with Bo Nix. Mm-hmm. And obviously last year, Mike Tomlin and the Steelers, we know where we are with that. But it's not just about Russell Wilson, because I would have been fine with him, BT, if it were in transition. Wilson for the first 8 to 10 weeks, maybe try to win some games, then move in Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. That's what has to happen. Otherwise, it makes no sense.
Okay, but I think you have to look at the finances here. You don't want to lead a show with, well, you know, guaranteed money is this, and because it's boring. All right, but I do think it really matters here. So Jameis is getting $4 million a year, right?
Two years. He's a backup.
He's a backup. And that's even on the lower end of backup money. There's some backups like
Mike White, last year?
I think Locke got five. Right. I think that Mike White got $16 million over 2 from the Dolphins. So that's on the lower
scale.
What's
Zach get from the
Yeah, no. Zach's going to be in Canada pretty soon to watch himself. So anyway, so you've got minimal money that is committed to Jameis Winston right now. If the Giants would have bestowed some, you know, like $35 million contract or a $30 million guarantee on Wilson, then I'd sit here and say it is flat out Nuttyville. This is stupid. His guarantee is 10.1. But so just follow the finances. $10 million for Russell Wilson, that's only guaranteed, and then $4 million this year for Jameis Winston. That's $14 million. So what they're telling, at least what I think they're telling me, the way I interpret things is, hey, people might perceive Russell Wilson to be the starter now, and he probably is right now. If he plays like ass, he's on the bench, and Winston is going to play.
Right.
And then obviously, and this is where you and I disagree a little bit, there is no doubt, in my opinion, they are absolutely drafting somebody in the top 2 rounds. If they don't, I will crush them. If they do, I will understand. And I wouldn't say like, but tacitly co-sign what they're doing here a little bit more than maybe I am right now.
Chris is in East Hanover. What's up, Chris?
Hey guys. Thanks for taking the call. BT, you're exactly right. Listen, I've been a Giant fan my whole life, right? People have to calm down. There were no better options, right? Obviously, I saw this come through last night. I said, okay, Aaron Rodgers' agent called the Giants, says, we're not coming there. clear as day. Boom. We got to get Russ. We got to get Jameis. Now, I believe they're going to fight it out for a starting spot. I don't think it's just going to hand it to Russ,
yep.
to your point, BT. To that point, I also believe they didn't believe, Daboll and Shane did not believe that Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders were the next guy. The one, you take him at three, you have to start them. That's death. And if they miss, they set this organization back 10 years. Their plan is obvious. And guys, by the way,
what is it? What is their plan? Please, Chris, enlighten me what their plan is. I'd love to hear this.
Their plan has got to be get the best player at three, whether it be Travis mm-hmm. Hunter or Abdul Carter, fortify the defense, and then go and try to either trade up to get Jackson Dart or this kid from Louisville, and you start to build from there. Listen, Jameis was never going to be teaching a kid. You'd have Daboll in a room being like, don't do that, don't do that.
Then so why even Rush, bring Chris, that's the point.
Go ahead.
Russell Wilson, and thank you for the call. Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston yep. both stink. That is the point. Right, this is their plan. Oh, build it out from there. This is not year one. By the way, if they were having that mindset, then why not just go get Justin Fields? How much money did he get from the Jets? They weren't even interested in Justin Fields. Would you rather have Justin Fields for the next year or two or Russell Wilson? The potential of Fields or Russell Wilson, who clearly is on the downside of his career, it doesn't add up. If you're telling me that it's not about this year, which obviously it's not, and if you're telling me they're not going to draft a top quarterback, which it seems obvious that they're not going to, then what is it about? The future? Then you should have went out there and got Justin Fields at least for the next couple of years.
I like Fields. I don't love Fields. I think he's interesting for the Jets in terms of energy for the Giants. I don't know what was said, and here's what we don't know. Justin Fields wants to play, which is why he's disenchanted with the Steelers. They didn't like, or he didn't like his camp, and he didn't like the way he was pulled. Okay, so I don't know this to be true. I would imagine as his agents were doing their due diligence, when the Giants either exploratory call with the Giants or text message, whatever it may have been, some interaction with the Giants, I don't know if Fields' people were like, hey, you know, he wants to start. He wants to be the starter. And if you can't, you know, promise us that up front, then we're not interested. And maybe they were up front. They said, hey, what? No, we can't do that
right.
for you.
Okay.
Whereas the Jets were a little more willing to do that. Listen, would I rather have a 25-year-old player with some potential upside? Yes, no question. See, but the thing, Sal, here's the thing. If we continue to evaluate the – and I know we almost have to, but I'm not because I know the answer by now. If we always evaluate them on all of the mistakes that they've made,
right.
nothing they do up until this point will make sense. But I will look at this – forget about the last couple of years. This year right now – the quarterback room is exponentially more interesting to me than it was a year ago. I think the roster is even better. I think they did a good job in free agency now, and I do think they've got some great options in the draft. So I'm not a Giant lover. I know it's easy to crush the Giants, but I don't think that they've done as bad a job as some people think. I really don't.
I know what you're saying. I can't ignore the years prior, and especially when you hear a caller like Chris say, well, they don't like either quarterback. Okay, fine. They don't love Cam Ward, let's say. Let's say they don't love Shedeur Sanders. It doesn't excuse last year. This is a repeated offense for this regime. You cannot keep kicking the can down the road. At some point, you need to say, we are taking a chance and drafting this guy. They passed on multiple guys last year
yep.
that right now clearly would have been their starting quarterback with hope that they could be the franchise guy. They didn't want to do that a year ago. Huge mistake that my point is I don't think that they can recover from. And the only way they could have is if they hit on, let's say, Cam Ward mm-hmm. or Shedeur now. You can't keep pushing this forward. You know why? They're not going to be here. Shane and Dave, here's how this is going to play out. When you sign Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston, and you're maybe going to take a flyer on a quarterback in a draft later in the draft that isn't a good quarterback draft, they are going to get fired at the end of this year because they're going to win 4 or 5 games. It's going to be another ugly season, and that will be the end of Shane and Daboll.
I don't really disagree, but again, I think when I look at what they're doing in the now, and it's hard to isolate it from what they've done in the past.
Right, but it makes sense.
Yeah, I choose to do that because it gives me a little more clarity to evaluate these moves now, and these moves based on the money. It's a menial commitment. $10 million to Russ, $4 million a year to Jameis. They haven't gotten rid of their third pick yet. They can still still draft Sanders. They could still move up for Ward. They could still trade down and get Jackson Dart. Like, there's still things in front of them. Look at it this way. Imagine, take any denomination of money that is fairly sizable, and you and your wife, say, 5 years ago, disagreed on either because you guys were house hunting like us, and all these things pop up in a marriage. Like, and you did something, you or me, but as the man of the house, we did something, and we made a poor investment, okay? I'm not saying you lost everything, but it was either you bought the wrong home and it didn't appreciate properly or whatever. And every single time, it's time for a new decision, your wife brings up, yeah, but 5 years ago, you cost us $100,000. Like, I get it, $100,000 or $50,000 or $1 million, depending upon your relative. I get that. But if you don't break away from that, you're never going to move forward. I'm going to at least give them a chance to make some corrections to their gross mistakes that they've made so far.
Yeah, and if it results in Cam Ward Sanders,
then good. If not,
even Dart. I'll give you even Dart.
Yeah, yeah.
If it doesn't happen, then they're going to be out. BT and Sal on the Fan live from Studio 42 at the MLB Network. Plenty of baseball talk to get into as well. Baseball Eve with opening day tomorrow. Your calls when we come back, 888-808-1019. We got to hear from you guys. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. Phil is calling from Howell. What's up, Phil? JR is in Rutherford. What's up, JR?
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm going to give you a view here that Positive Tom's going to, you know, later regurgitate as his own. This is not awful, right? Think about it, right? Both of the money is almost nil. If these guys don't draft the quarterback this year, let's say they draft the second or third rounder. That guy's going to need more than six games to get in. He gets the whole year, and then next year you still have Jameson for another year at $4 million. Which you could start him 4 or 5 years, this guy will end up getting 20 games under his belt before he starts. If, let's say, they don't get a quarterback this year, Wilson wins 6 or 7 games, he's out, you still have the same situation, a starter for next year, Jameson, which then you can draft a quarterback.
Jameis Winston stinks. He is brought in, and I like him personally. I mean, it's just the truth. I'm sorry. I like his personality.
You're
talking about having Jameis Winston start now 2 years potentially. That's the issue that I have. Thank you for the call. What are we doing here? Do you guys want to see winning football or not? And if you're not going to see winning football, don't you at least want to see a young potential franchise quarterback?
You do. You don't want to ruin him by throwing him out there too early. But yeah, I mean, that's what you want to see here. And while I am okay, I put quotes around this because I'm really not okay. It's just based on putting the past and just kind of evaluating these moves.
Okay, I'll meet you there. So let's have the conversation without me referencing I'll never get over what they did a year ago.
By the way, nor should you.
Right.
Because it basically handicapped them for a decade.
Correct. It's going to lead to
100%.
The eventual firing of Shanny Dable. But for the sake of today's show and conversation, I'll forget that.
Okay. Now, what the caller just said, think about this. It might sound easy on the radio. Well, you got Jameis, and it doesn't work out. You got Jameis for next year. But at the end of the equation that he just laid out, it's now the 2027 season. That's untenable.
That's the
problem.
You really don't. Like, I like Jameis Winston. I get it. As a person, and there are some exciting elements to his game.
Definitely.
You don't want to see him because he's the backup quarterback. And our last caller is saying, yeah, you can see him this year a little bit if Russell's no good, or next year. No. You don't want the backup quarterback to be starting any games this year. The plan this year should be still Russell Wilson, however many games he can play, see where they're at as far as the win-loss goes, and then transition to the next guy. Anything other than that does not make any sense to me. And if they don't take a quarterback in the draft, then that is gone from the equation. And if they do, it's probably going to be somebody later in the draft, to your point, BT. And maybe we don't see him at all this year, and then maybe you're doing that thing next year with Russell Wilson again, or another stopgap quarterback until this young quarterback is ready?
Could you imagine the odds on, like, say, 2 summers ago, Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, and Jameis Winston, all New York quarterbacks?
I remember we had the conversation, not you or I, but I might have been filling in even on the midday at that point, but there was a conversation about the Giants potentially getting Russell Wilson. But this was before...
I remember that.
Yeah, so this was before the... Russell Wilson was viewed differently then.
Yes.
And I still think he's okay at for a certain thing. I'd be fine with him being the starter for now, meaning you want to get Cam Ward ready, you want to get Shedeur Sanders ready. I'm fine with Russell Wilson for 8, 10, 12 weeks. Then you need to see this year the next guy. Who's going to be the starter next year? Because it should not be Russell Wilson.
I think that's the plan. And again, I think that they're very much married to that, and I think they're very aggressively in pursuit of that. How they make it happen, that's on them, not us. We can only tell them what we think they should do, and they know what they have to do at this point. Anything else would be completely reckless. And I mean, I say this tongue in cheek, but a little bit for effect, but not really. Like, if they don't draft the quarterback in round one or round two, just get in the car, leave the headquarters, and just keep driving to your home. You're fired.
Okay, so all those things, like I said, to start the show, meanwhile, I say I'm not going to go nuts, and I flipped out already 5 times in the first 40 minutes of the show. It is still there. They could take a quarterback. Maybe, you know what, they're smarter than we are. Maybe Shane and Dable, certainly than I am, maybe Shane and Dable have identified a quarterback that they believe they could get in the second round, jump back in late first round, third round, who knows. They identified a quarterback and they say, we're going to take him under our wing, try to win some games this year, have him sit for a year, and then next year he could be the starting quarterback. Either way, they have to come away from this year's draft with a quarterback that they better develop to be the starter next season.
I agree. Let me ask you this here, Sal. We'll get back to the calls. But don't you think it's more, forget about wins and losses, because no matter what they do, they're not getting enough this year to have a big enough season.
Do you hear what their win total is? Gio was saying
I thought it was 5, but Sof said it was 3.5.
3.5.
That's with the additions?
Yeah.
Oh, man. What was it when it was just poor Tommy DeVito on the roster? Half of a win? Anyway, forget about wins for a second. I don't think they're coming in a very plentiful manner this year, just a guess. But don't you think it would be more interesting, because I do, to see Brian Daboll coach Jameis Winston for the first 2 months of the season and try to coach the mistakes out of him rather than Brian Daboll coach Russell Wilson? Wilson's not going to change. Like, Wilson's buttoned up, and he's not going to get a lot better, not going to get a lot worse. It's just, can he move, and does his body just stop operating because he's 36, 37? With Jameis, who's been around 10 years, throwing a ton of touchdowns and picks, the thought is, if you could just coerce that, the evil, like the devil that's on the other shoulder as a quarterback, maybe he could be really interesting. Not to make him the future of the Giants, but wouldn't it be enough evidence, like, oh wow, look what Daboll did to Jameis Winston? Wouldn't that embolden you to think, maybe, what could he do with a young kid?
Maybe, but we saw that with Jones, and then we saw how that fell out. I see what you're saying, because Jameis has the potential if you could coach him a little bit better. I mean, at this point, I think Jameis is what he is. So, yeah, I mean, I don't need to learn about Daboll with another project. I need to find out about Daboll with drafting and developing his guy. Frank is in White Plains. What's up, Frank?
Frankie.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Sal, you 100% are right, man. You know something? I'm very surprised on owners, on John Mara and his partner. They start these problems with Daniel Jones when they give him that big contract. Now with this guy, they make mistakes with, what's his name, Broccoli. They make all kind of mistakes. And really, this is disgusting what they're doing. You know what happened is, you're right. They might as well they fire the coach and manager GM now, because they don't want to win. At the end of the season, they're going to keep saying, oh, we gave him chance, we gave him quarterback to win, and they didn't win, and we fired him. Excuse me, my English, I'm an Irish, but that's BS, you know that?
Thank you, Frank. That was great stuff.
Good. Love Frank.
We appreciate the call. The only path here that it would remotely work is if the owner has given Shane and Daboll a little bit of freedom to say, okay, try to win some games now, but build this thing up, and then next year is the year that I was looking for last year, but next year is the year with their young quarterback. However they find him in the draft, wherever they get him this year, whether it's the third pick, whether it's later, the path out, it's still there, but it has to be with drafting the quarterback, developing to a point where he is starting next season, and the Giants should be expected to win, I don't know, 8, 9 games?
I mean, the problem is, and it's always like this intersection, like the players who are already established stars like Dexter Lawrence and Andrew Thomas when he's healthy, you know, and I mean, it's a shortest list of established great players. That's why the Giants aren't very good, but they certainly have a couple, and by the time that quarterback quarterback is developed, where's Dexter Lawrence at that point? Where's Andrew Thomas at that point? Malik Nabers is going to start getting paid. Like, it's never as simple as, well, in 2 years, things should be fine, because the things around the quarterback are going to change, too.
BT and Sal on the Fan. When we come back, we'll have Cliff Floyd starting to get set for opening day tomorrow. Can't wait. It's Baseball Eve. We'll get things started with our first guest of the day live here from Studio 42 at MLB Network, BT and Sal on the Fan. Right now, joining us, former Met BT. I don't know if you know this. He was one of my guys back in the day. I had the 30. I had the Mets jersey, Cliff Floyd, number 30. I wore it to Game 7 of 2006 postseason. Cliff Floyd joining the show. What's up, Cliff?
What up, fellas? How y'all feeling, man?
Pretty good, man.
What's up, man?
What do you think about this Mets team, Cliff? We referenced 2006. A lot of people are saying this is the best Mets lineup since 2006. You were obviously on that team. Where do you stand with the Mets going into the year?
I think they're going to thump. I really do. I think they're going to hit the ball, obviously. I think when you look at, you know, every team having adversity to start the season, this is a little bit much, right? Starting pitching-wise, losing your starting catcher. Those are all things that Mendoza, for me, Carlos is going to have to really manage this year and figure out, you know, some different things as opposed to being able to sit back a little bit and let this team play out. He doesn't have that luxury. When you lose key guys like they've lost early on, you know, we always say some guys have to step up, and I do believe in supporting cast stepping up, but this is a hard loss for your starting rotation. I think the bullpen would be fine. You know, and look, Soto, yes, he's amazing. He's dominant. He's going to do so many good things to help this lineup as far as, you know, not just 30 and 100, but as far as, you know, going deeper in accounts, trusting all these things. He's going to help them in that facet. But you can't put all, you know, the responsibility on Juan Soto. That's just not fair.
No, and it's not. I mean, Lindor was great a year ago. Vientos, I want to get back to him in a second. Pete's going to probably bounce back with some big numbers. Listen, the Mets should mash yours. Would you say thump? I like that. A little thumpage. There you go.
A little thump.
Yeah, a little thump. I get a little old school thumping. So when Sal brought Johnny, referenced the 06 team and the 2006 team and how good that offense was. Now, specific to what you just said about the starting pitching, what Mendoza's got to do, don't you think on some level we need to adjust to how we view starting pitching? Because I don't want to say it's not important, but it doesn't seem like it's as important as it was back in the day.
I agree. And I can't put my finger on that because I believe you need starters to go deep. I think when you think about how do you get to the end of the season and try to, you know, and go get the chip. How do you get the championship ring, you know, in your city is through starting pitching. I've always believed that my whole life. Now, look, things have changed, right? Like, I'm not this dinosaur sitting saying that things don't change. Analytically, things have changed. I get it. But what I'm saying is, you know, starting pitching, there has to be an accountability responsibility to go deeper in ball games. I don't think you can just keep relying on relievers to come in at some point and hope these guys can get, you know, crucial big outs in certain situations. We've seen that fails at times. Starting pitching, to me, I'm a big guy on that side of it. So I think you need a lot of it. I really do. I think you need 6-7, you know, guys going into the season. So if you lose one or two, you still feel good about it, because everybody needs to, for the mental side of it. When you walk through those doors, you need to feel good about who's going on that bump that morning, that day, that, you know, that evening. I think you need that more than anything. And, you know, some teams are high on it, and some teams I think are just sort of like, we'll be fine.
Like the Mets. So with that being said, Cliff, where do you think that they rank in your mind in the National League East going into the year?
I think obviously they're going to be in the hunt. What do they rank? I think right now, They're second to the Phillies. You know what? And the Braves are not at full strength. I don't think the Braves are really what we thought, you know, what they were before. But I do think that, you know, when you look at where the Mets are, you have to get healthy. And they can ill afford to lose anybody else throughout the season. That's how I see it.
Yeah, no doubt. So, Cliff, you were I loved watching you hit as well. I just loved your approach.
And he was the man, dude.
I loved the
personality,
swing,
the swing, yep, all of it.
It's Uncle Cliffy. It's what we call him, Uncle Cliffy. So you know what awaits for a young hitter who really impressed a year ago like Vientos. Can you verbalize, tell us exactly what he's going to have to adjust to and how the league's going to adjust to him?
First off, I love this kid. I had a chance of being around him in camp. We did the 30 and 15. He's anxious to go out there and prove that he's this good. And the one thing I love, and I'll tell you this right off the bat, is he was a sponge to Lindor at around the field, in the field, understanding responsibilities of like not just being a good hitter. I think we know he's going to hit. He just has that makeup. But can you be an all-around player, right? Can you field? Can you not be out there, you know, as a liability, coming off the field and losing that last at-bat because you can't play defense? So for me, he understands that. He put a lot of work in this spring. I talked to him for about 15 minutes. You know, he just wants to be great. And I told him, don't put the pressure on yourself to go out there and do something you're not capable of doing. Just be you. Just do what you can do. And you know, in due time, you're going to be fine. You'll be all right. This game will beat you up, and it's going to beat you up consistently. You know, but you got to take it. You know, you know, bright lights, big city. You know how New York can do. It'll tear you down. So, you know, you got to weather that storm and not look over your shoulder and wonder who's coming if you should not make a couple plays when you should.
How difficult is it, Cliff, for a young player like that who has success year one, kind of out of nowhere, to then follow up on that? Because now everybody's expecting him to be kind of a star, a young star in the game. But going into his second year, how difficult is that facing the challenges and changes that he may face throughout the course of his second year?
Yeah, you know, you can't worry about everybody's opinion about you. You got to the challenge of that is, to your point, is the pressure we put on ourselves to go out there and try to be some, you know, be great or try to be the player that somebody is telling me I need to be. Like when I fail on me. I'm failing because I put in the work or I didn't put in the work. I'm failing on that side of it. The one thing he has to worry about, and I always say this to every young player I talk to, the adjustment to the adjustment. And then when you think about that part, the league is adjusting to you, then you adjust to them. You don't go away from your strength, though. The strength of who you are, you perfect that, right? So if I perfect what I'm really good at, then I can always work on what I'm not. So, you know, I can go in the cage and do all, you know, I can go in the lab and work on that down in the cage and do all those things. But what I know I can do, I'm going to perfect that. And that's how good he is. That talent that he has is that good.
I love him, too. I don't disagree. It's BT and Sal. By the way, Studio 42, we're at the MLB Network, which is great. Of course, today is baseball eve, and we've got Cliff Floyd with us now. A little later, we've got Ryan Dempster, Mark DeRosa, Al Leiter, getting you ready, Mets and the Yanks, BT and Sal on the Fan. All right, so you talk about the starting pitching. We hit Vientos. We know Lindor's a stud. We know that Soto's amazing. We don't have to really go too deeply into that.
Yeah.
But if you don't have great starting pitching to start, I don't love the defensive alignment of Pete, who's, okay. Beatty might be playing a lot of second base. We'll see if he can make the transition. And Soto has a good arm, but is a little sloppy and right. Is the right side defensively good enough for this team?
That's going to be the biggest challenge. I really do believe that. And I don't, you know, I can't say for sure because I hate speculating. But, you know, when you think about the pressure that Beatty put on this team by having a really good spring offensively, they have to find a place for him to play, right? So you're trying to figure out how on the fly, which is the toughest thing to do for anybody, you're trying to figure out, you know, is it a good fit? Can you make the plays that you have to make? But you can't give out any. You can't give up any extra outs. You know, I think Pete has done a better job. He's going to field the baseball. He's not going to beat you up. You know, and I'm gonna be honest with you guys. The biggest question for me is Soto out in that big right field? Like, you know, is he going to be able to handle? You know, because I've been critical on him about his defense at times. I've been a guy that's talked about, you know, Soto's defense. Can he be the all around player? I know how. Listen, we all know how great he can be. It's not about the money. It's just about what we see with our own eyes. Like, can he be a game changer for your team? Yes, he can. But can he hurt you? Have we seen him hurt his team in the outfield? Yes, we have, in smaller ballparks. So this Citi Field is a different ballpark. The right side of the field, I think they'll be able to handle this challenge. But it's left to be seen. If Beatty is getting more playing time at second, you can't expect him to go out there and just right away figure out how to make, you know, these defensive changes, even though the shift is not a part of the game. I don't know if the shift would help him or not, if he was able to play a little bit more deeper into right field, so on and so forth. So yeah. Time will tell.
Cliff, what are you expecting from Pete Alonso this year?
A monster year. You know, Pete stayed the course this offseason. I was a little worried for him. I can't lie. I was like, man, you don't want to be behind the eight ball in this. We've seen it happen numerous times. Guys get down to one or two teams, and now you have to take a deal you don't want to take. I felt like Pete said, hey, I'm coming back here, and I'm going to prove why I'm a New Yorker, and that's why he's there.
in the three hole though? You like that?
I don't mind them there. This is the thing about the game. When you see superstars kind of adjust a little bit and understand the importance of driving in runs, like I'm not worried about Pete not, you know, missing opportunities or trying to hit a three run homer in certain situations. I think he's become mentally, I talked to him in spring. He's like, look, I want to be better in situations where I'm a run producer and not a slugger. Now, that's coming from his mouth. Now, that's something that you have to think about as a player and understand what you can do for this team and help them.
Boy, that's, see, I was going to say real quick, that's a big adjustment mentally. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, but you can commit mentally to it, but what's the physical commitment to that when you're actually in the box?
The biggest thing is understanding, you know, what the pitchers are trying to do in certain situations. Sometimes you leave the on-deck circle walking up and you outthink the situation. You outthink what's going to happen. This guy on the mound is bound to make a mistake, but you can't go up there 0-1 swinging at the first pitch in the dirt and giving him that luxury that we need as hitters. You have to let him make the mistake. And that's the one thing, you know, when you say challenge, you have to buy into that. You have to legit say, hey, you know what? I'm not worried about that pitch right off the black that the umpire might give him, because that's not my pitch. I'm good enough to fight. And yep. That's the one thing I think Soto's going to help these guys with and go, hey, look, guys, you know, you don't want that pitch 0-0. I know the umpire called it, but you don't want that. And so now you have to believe that you can be in this box and get the job done without having to get the perfect pitch and hit that ball at the ballpark. I think, you know, a little base hit to right field will start to sort of get that mindset right. Because when you watch the Dodgers, the reason they win so much is Freddie, yes, he can hit a three-run home. Yes, he can hit a walk-off. We get that. But can he take that ball to left center gap that we've seen Freddie do so many times to help that lineup? That's what makes him that good.
Cliff, you were one of the guys who showed David Wright the ropes in the big leagues when he first came in. How much credit you take it for him having his number 5 retired this year out in July at Citi Field?
Oh, man, you know, that hits the heart different, fellas. Y'all know that, right? And I took no credit. I never patted myself on the back. I just felt like when I was in Montreal, Marquise Grissom, Larry Walker, Randy Milligan, these cats took me under their belt, man. It was like, look, dog, this is what we're going to do, right? This is what you're going to do. You're going to get to the ballpark early. You're going to make time for yourself, and you're going to come here and work, and you're going to be done in the cage before we get down there, right? Mm-hmm. You're done. Your day's – you worked your tail off already.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing I told him. And I knew from the first time we had a conversation, I was like, man, this is going to be a breeze. He leaned on me, but he never was going to fall on his face. I never had to pick him up and dust him off. I just felt like he had it from day one. And it was easy. I'm looking forward to July 17th. He's dealing with it differently, right? Like being at home is different. He gets a chance to get away every once in a while. But, you know, the kids, the wife, the whole shebang, I was like, hey, bro, you might want to do something else, dog. Like, you have to figure something else out.
Get out of the house.
Yeah, oh, you got to get out of the house a little bit, bro.
Start playing golf. Start doing something.
Something, man. I'm telling you, you play paddleball, something. Pickleball, paddleball.
Cliff, you think he'd be a good coach?
That's a great question. Do I think he'd be a good coach? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to get away for that? No. I don't think, you know, I mean, from my conversations with him, I don't think he's there yet. But, you know, things change, man. Like, you know, like when you start seeing – guys manage, like, when I see Albert Pujols, I had a chance to go play golf with him last year, and he's talking, like, he's anxious to do it. You know, you start thinking about who would be great at it. Would he be great? I think so, but I don't see him doing it.
You're going to be out there for the retirement ceremony that weekend?
I can't wait. I planned it out. I'm flying in early. I'll be there, like, you know, we had the same agent, so I'll be there with my agent. Like, this is going to be... It just takes us all the way back. I'm going to stay in the back, man, and just, you know, take it all in. But I always say, you know, everybody, every dream, every ball player, you know, is to be, you know, as great as you possibly can. I think the icing on the cake is, you know, obviously winning a championship. But, like, if you don't get that, you know, Hall of Fame, retiring numbers. Those are all icing on them. I mean, to have this type of, you know, moment and memory to cherish for the rest of your life. I mean, what else can you ask for?
Ah, it's going to be a great weekend honoring the captain, David Wright, of course, number five, like you said, July 17th or that weekend there, the 18th, 19th, 20th out at Citi Field. Cliff, we love you, man. Thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Always, fellas. Hey, let's have a great year this year.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
Looking forward to it. I mean, hopefully those deficiencies. See, I'm kind of with Cliff, BT, when he talks about the pitching. Mm-hmm. It's inherent in me to believe in starting pitching.
Yep.
I am trying to evolve and understand, based off of what we saw last year, based off of the way the sport is going, that you can succeed without having that pitching. However, I do think the postseason is still a different animal.
Well, think about how tough it is to change or to tweak or alter different personality traits that we've had since we were young, things we want to work on. I don't think it's that different from a philosophy or a mindset. Everything that we knew when you and I were first introduced to the game of baseball really centered around the ability of somebody in the middle of the diamond to throw strikes and get a lot of outs and give his team a chance to win. And then we watched the Yankees last year, who, you know, didn't have Gerrit Cole for the first couple of months, and you know, people emerging out of nowhere, and the Yankees basically, remember, they set a record for the first, remember, whatever it was, first, I don't know, 20 star, whatever the numbers were, but they did something amazing. And I think that, you know, even the Mets over the years, where Scherzer and other pitchers have been hurt, I if you have it, it's phenomenal. But it's no longer as paramount as it once was. You better hit, though.
BT, it's Sal on the Fan. We'll come back, continue the Russell Wilson conversation. We still have plenty more guests to come live from the MLB Network show studios, Studio 42. We have Dempster coming up, I think, next at 11:20. Mark DeRosa later on. Al Leiter as well.